Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And good morning. I'm Lynette here, and we have a special guest doctor in the studio, Christine Brazel. Welcome, Christine.
Thanks, Lynette.
Now, you're at our Kirkland Longevity Clinic. Why don't we take just a few minutes and find out what's going on? What are some new things, and what are some things that they offer at all three of the clinics?
Well, so they're at the specific to Kirkland right now, we have the IV therapies, and then more predominant in Kirkland than the other clinics, but available at all three is the Viasure procedure.
Oh, yes.
And that's for the men with prostatitis and sexual function issues that might need a little more advanced treatment than just the testosterone.
So for erectile dysfunction, for BPH, and then finally for prostatitis.
Yep. And then and then of course at Kirkland we have a new office that continues be evolving as we're, you know, figuring out where the space is and what we need to use it for. So every time you come in, there's a little something new with the lighting or some of the decorations. So that's been pleasant. But last fall we made a change to welcoming our new patients, which is to offer something called the MyDNA Age Epigenetic test, and this was a transition away from using the telomere test from our screening. And the reason is that epigenetics is, not just a buzzword that you hear on the podcast or see on Instagram, but actually all of us think about our genes and they're written in stone, and you've got a gene, there's nothing you can do about
it. Nothing we can do.
And that's not true at all. So when people say diabetes runs in my family, it's like, well, the susceptibility might, but most diabetes is preventable. Most of it is, and that's through lifestyle choices, and that's nutrition, and that is exercise, and that is sleep, and, you know, whether or not you smoked or drank alcohol, and we talk about those things. So this test can tell you how old are your cells, not how old is your driver's license you are. It says how old are your cells. And unfortunately, all of us are exposed to the world. I mean, it's a toxic world, and not everyone has perfect behavior, if we even know what that is anymore. And we come when we come. We come with what we got, and this kind of gives you a sense of what did you bring with you. And so that test, the epigenetic test, gives you an idea of how many years older or younger you are than your driver's license says. It also gives some very good information about some genetics related to cholesterol metabolism and Alzheimer's risk, and the other one, folate metabolism, which is a vitamin. Well, all of us know about folic acid, but what is it really about, and what's all these MTHFR tests about? And so this gives people insight. But those are genes. They don't tell you what is going to happen. It tells you what you can do with them with your lifestyle choices. So all those genes could be manipulated, turned on and off with these little switches, which is the epigenetics. And so when people think that there's no chance or there's no choice, there's very few genetic conditions that are 100% going to happen. Most of them can be stopped early if you know what you got.
Yes.
And we don't do full genetic testing or counseling, but all of the lifestyle choices that we've been advising people on show up as longer telomeres when we did the longer telomere test, you know, the telomere testing, and then lower biologic ages when people are doing the MyDNA age. So one of the exciting things is one of the products we've been using, Dr. Umat brought in a couple years ago, is a product called Prolon, fasting mimicking diet. And it was developed by an anti-aging researcher, anti-cancer researcher, Dr. Walter Longo. And it's a little kit that we offer our patients who are on a weight loss journey very often. It's part of our weight loss program now that we've created, but can help people clean out some of that damage damage in a short phase of time. And I just saw a study a couple weeks ago that said that that test, they didn't name it by name because they're not allowed to, was shown to the patients who did that had a lower biologic age than after they did it.
Wow.
And so once again, many of the things we do are lowering people's biologic age.
Three monthly courses of it lower their biologic age by about 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's
you
huge.
Do a 5-day course once a month. So you do it over 3 months.
Or longer if you have more weight to lose and more cholesterol to get down and more blood pressure to change. So you can keep doing it. And that's the exciting thing with the research is all these things we've been doing that seem random keep showing up in the literature as lowering biologic age. And so when I've had a few patients take these tests that have been with us for 10 years or more, their ages are definitely lower than their driver's license would say. And that's just the testament of how diligent they were as patients, but also knowing that many of the things we do that we think are good for one thing, like you were talking about the astaxanthin being for something, it's good for a lot of things. Yeah. None of the stuff we're doing is good for one thing. It's good for your system. And that's, as Dr. Umet said, the whole patient is going to get better, even if some conditions don't always change the way we want.
You know, we do the calcium score, and we're all very fond. All of our physicians are very fond of doing the calcium score. But as a general rule, the plaque does build up over time. And very rarely do we see that plaque reading come down. But I saw one recently that came down. And I was overjoyed.
Yay!
So was the patient.
I bet. Yes.
I mean, she was over the moon, but, you know, it was. And the reason we repeated it was because her lipid profile wasn't responding as well as I was hoping it was going to respond. But nonetheless, the actual plaque buildup had decreased, and the majority of the decrease came from the LAD and the circumflex. The right coronary actually increased just a tad, but just seeing that was just so joyful, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love you.
Yay.
You did it.
Yes.
And I remember a lot of time we can give a lot of advice, but unless the patient understands it and is able to follow through, they're not going to get the best outcomes. And here I got the best outcome possible, and it was a very joyous moment.
Well, so other things that we measure here, we use a cardiac inflammation panel, which breaks down inflammation markers. Is your plaque active or is it a little quiet? What part of it is driving the plaque? Particle numbers, some are hereditary, some aren't. And I get patients who have coronary artery disease, we found, and then we get their numbers down, and I see every time we do the specialty test, maybe every 6 months or a year, they're applying all of the lifestyle principles, the hormone replacement, the herbal medicines. They're not putting things in that they know they shouldn't put in. And they can change from like a 180 on about to have a heart attack next year to probably not going to have a heart attack for a very long time, if at all, if they keep it up. And we can measure this stuff, which is so wonderful. But that's part of your aging process is, are you taking care of your blood vessels? Because a blood vessel anywhere is a blood vessel everywhere in your body, your brain, your eyes, your kidneys, your legs, your heart, your arms. It doesn't – the arteries need to be healthy, and we really focus a lot on that. But it changes how your brain ages, changes how your bone ages, changes how your muscle ages. And so you can't separate out blood from the rest of the body because if – you know, it's everywhere.
Yes.
So the positive thing is we're seeing this in real time in our clinic, but we're not doing clinical studies. But we're seeing clinical studies that show that what we've been doing are working, and we see it at the front line.
We should do clinical studies, Dr. Mixon.
Yes, we should. And in fact, I had a discussion Monday of this week with the aging research team at University of Utah, where I got my MD. And we are talking about doing a couple of joint studies. So, of course, they want me to fund them.
Of course they do.
Go find that basketball player that
well,
funded
you have
the
to say,
lawsuit.
No, you have to say that's a conflict of interest, so you cannot fund
Yes, yes. Someone else will have to do that.
But see, they want me to put up the money and they'll do the study.
Ah, of course.
You say, well, that would be biased. I think.
Yeah. Oopsie.
So, but we do have some studies that we're wanting to look at, and so I'm talking to them. I'm also trying to get in touch with a group down at Stanford, but for some reason they're not answering my phone calls. So I'm gonna find a way to show up at their door and see what I can do.
There you go.
Yes. You know.
Well, this is all because we want you to be a patient at longevity, and this is so much more that we can do for you. Thank you, Dr. Brazel, for explaining that. We're going to take a break here in just a couple minutes. But if you'd like to think, if you've been thinking and you would like to be a patient at longevity, come see us. Make that appointment. 866-86-YOUNG is the number to call. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go online to lmclinic.com. Ask for the free health analysis appointment. That's when you give us a little bit of your history. You come in. We'll do two tests, a blood test and an in-body test. And that gives our doctors at Longevity so much information so that you know if you're at risk for things like cancers, heart disease, joint pain, brain shrinkage, diabetes, dementia, and so much more. These are all those things we don't want to hear about, don't want to talk about, that as we age, this is what's happening to our bodies, right?
And not included in the health analysis, but patients are allowed to ask for the Galleri test at the time they do the health analysis. It still costs the additional fee, but we have a lot of anxious people wondering about this and the importance of that test for many people is peace of mind.
Yes.
And also being able to make plans with their family. What are we going to do next year? Are we going to move? Are we going to build our dream house? Are we going to take our trip around the world? Mm. Or are we going to be needing to see an oncologist? And for people who have a strong family history or personal history, like we talked about, the peace of mind is the biggest value of that test is knowing that if you've had cancer, that it hasn't come back yet. Or if you're worried about things that haven't been found by a regular doctor, that maybe could be ruled out. So we have allowed people to add that to the health analysis if they go ahead and proceed with the screening blood draw, which is not included. That's the $595. They can add the Galleri on. But that's not – they can ask for that at the time of the health analysis.
Yes, and they'll explain all of that. Yeah. They're so good. And we want you to be a patient here at Longevity. We want you to be one of those that in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, just like our caller earlier today that says, hey, I've been a patient for so many years and I feel better than I ever have. We hear that all the time.
All the time.
And we want that for you as well. Here's the number to call to make your appointment for your free health analysis. That is 866-86-YOUNG or lmclinic.com. We'll be back after this break. We're talking with Paul and Rob next.
No.
You say goodbye and I say hello.
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 Hello. Hello. We're here. Hello. And we're glad you've tuned in. Leading Edge Medicine, we have a lot of fun here on the show, and we enjoy it when you call in with your questions. And I loved it that Mark had called in earlier, and or Mike, was it Mark? It was Mark from Camano Island, and said he had he was cancer-free from prostate and then battled kidney, and he was a few months out from that, so that was good news. We do love hearing those good news stories, so
yep.
Feel free to come and share those with us, as well as your questions about your aging health. We're headed to Tacoma right now. We have Paul on the line. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, Paul.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I'm on Keytruda for prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to ask you about is I have a very high C-reactive protein, 22.
Yeah.
How do I investigate what's causing that? My oncologist says, don't worry about it. That's a result of Keytruda causing the body to fight your cancer.
Okay. Yeah, the high C-reactive protein just says there's inflammation present in your body. And people, for instance, with rheumatoid arthritis or degenerative joint disease will often have very high C-reactive proteins. And in your case, you know, it probably is related to the inflammation being triggered from the prostate cancer because Keytruda is only used in men who have a very aggressive form of a prostate cancer. It's usually the type that is not responsive to androgen shut down. So these tend to be the tumors that spread quickly and cause the most troubles. And so Keytruda is kind of our fallback drug for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with Gleason 10, prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And is it common to see this high C-reactive protein number in cancer patients like me?
In cancer patients that are on a chemotherapy that are resulting in tissue inflammation, tissue death, yes. And so that it doesn't surprise me. So it's not a, you know, it's not a, it's not an everyday sort of result, but it's one that occurs often enough that it's not a big surprise at all.
I'm taking turmeric and green tea extract.
Good.
In the evening, in the morning, in the evening. I don't know if it's bringing it down or not. I'll be having lab tests later on this month.
Good.
The other thing, too, is I had the Cleveland Heart Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that the VLDL is 47.7. What do I need to do to improve that? That's just slightly above the optimal, which is 47.1 or less.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So do you have any heart disease? Are you on any cholesterol-lowering medications?
I am. I'm on amlodipine.
That's blood pressure.
It sounds like you're talking about the size of the VLDL as opposed to the
total value. Yeah.
So the particle size on the second page, we're right under the HDL particles. Is that what you're looking at?
I'm on chromium, 100 milligrams.
Okay.
Optimal cholesterol. This is all from you guys.
Uh-huh.
And NAC.
Okay.
I just started that about a month ago.
Okay. And then look at the Cleveland Heart Lab panel one more time. What is the total LDL, oxidized LDL?
Okay, let me see. Lipid protein. Huh.
Did you do this at our clinic?
Yes.
You should probably make an appointment with your provider to get into details about it, and they can look at the whole page and look at all the particles together, kind of tell a better story than just one particle alone. But you think you're talking about the VLDL size, and as opposed to the actual amount of the VLDL. And if you can get your triglycerides down, you can get your VLDL down. If your LDL and your triglycerides are down, that's how you calculate it, the remnant cholesterol. And usually those things go up when we're having an excess of, fiber-free foods, sugars, fats, and alcohols. So if there isn't a fiber attached and it's too much for your blood, it'll turn into a triglyceride and spill into that pathway. Some people are just going to make those larger VLDLs. So you really just want to look at your calculated number VLDL. I love a 15 or less, but I don't think that's the standard care. I just know I like that number the most for calculated VLDL. But what you have to be careful is if you're on a drug that's modifying your immune system, you have to be really careful that your supplements are not interfering with that. And so CRP can be caused by food allergens, environmental allergens, viruses, bacterial infections, as well as autoimmune disease and smoke and damage from the treatment. So worry less about the CRP than making sure you're not accidentally undoing the benefit of being on the Keytruda to begin with. And so that would be making sure you're very clear with your oncologist about what you're taking. Because you can get those numbers down through diet changes rather than through supplementation or medication. And that means usually cutting out the ice cream is a big one.
No.
Or things like, I know.
What?
It's a fiber-free food for most people.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the simple carbohydrates just increase the triglycerides, and it's just, you know, it's a bummer, but hey, that's reality. And again, as Dr. Brazel just mentioned, it's not a value that is of significance. It is the whole picture.
The overall pattern.
Together,
I have patients that number the VLDL particle size, the P, and the size, what's next to the HDL. Some of that's inherited, and some of it's just going to happen. And if everything else is in the green or the early stages of the yellow, it's not the thing to focus on. The thing to focus on is a nutrient-dense, fiber-rich diet full of antioxidants that are natural while you while you're healing from cancer.
That's the most important thing. I found the oxidized LDL.
Yeah.
It's 36.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
36 is a very good number. And, you know, the VLDL also, again, part of the very low density lipoprotein. That's what it stands for. So the low, they all together mark the risk for damage. And then the first panel where you found the oxidized LDL, those are the ones that are telling us that there's ongoing inflammation. Myeloperoxidase, PLA2, oxidized LDL, ADMA, and SDMA. And if they are high, that means that there's ongoing damage and you want to be very proactive. But again, remember, you have to take that into context with the fact that you have cancer and you're on Keytruda and your CRP is also high. So how does that play into it?
I've seen this much scarier numbers for CRP.
Yes. Yeah.
So that doesn't equal an ER visit. Some people live with that with chronic disease and, of course, in your case, treatment. But it's part of your bigger picture. And your bigger picture is all of you, including the things you're doing or don't outside of the doctor's office. And your primary, your provider here at LMC can help guide you with some of those choices.
Definitely. And then, you know, the chromium, I heard you mention chromium and optimal cholesterol. I agree with both of those supplements. Optimal cholesterol being a plant-based polycosanol that'll help. And chromium helps curb cravings and helps with sugar. So remember sugar being a culprit here as well with triglycerides and therefore the rest of the panel. Okay?
Well, HDLP. That's 32. That's
right.
Just a little bit.
That's probably genetic, and there's not a lot you can do about that except keep the other numbers around it even lower. Maybe not lower than that, but in and of itself, there isn't a lot that can change that outside of aerobic activity.
Well, the HDL you want as high as possible, and that is a genetic marker. And in some people that are lucky enough, it tends to run high. So it's high-density lipoprotein. And what it really means is that it reduces the buildup of plaque. So, you know, we call it, and I'll inverted commas, you know, in quotation marks, the good versus the bad cholesterol. Mm-hmm. It's just that it prevents the buildup of plaque faster when you have high HDL. You genetically inherit it. And at our clinic, we do use niacin and other things to help you raise that, but aerobic conditioning will as well. So we do monitor that very carefully. But it is, a whole global picture. What is that in relation to the LDL is probably more significant. If you are running low, yes, it is important. But then if you can bring the LDL down, then it becomes less of a risk factor for you.
And triglycerides, also sometimes it's genetic, but the lower the triglycerides, the higher the HDL can climb, so the triglycerides actually suppress it a little bit. So that goes back to all the things we just talked about, the fiber-free foods in excess to what your body can manage at any given time. And so for most people, that's a little bit more a salad and a little less of other things for most people.
And then whoever your provider is, maybe also talk to them. What we just talked about earlier is the 5-day fast mimicking protocol. That might actually be helpful for you.
Yeah.
It may stimulate autophagy, may help you bring down some of the inflammation markers. Okay.
I'll do that. Right. And one last thing. Washington Post just had an article on rapamycin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's getting in the news more and more now.
Okay. Oh, yes, it is. Okay. You know what? Paul, why don't you stay on the line with us and we will talk about Dr. Mixon's, one of Dr. Mixon's favorite things to talk about. And that's rapamycin, right?
Yep.
We'll take a break right here. Paul, we'll be back with you. And Rob, we're going to take your call and there's room for you. Our phone lines are open at 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
He's on chemo. He don't think he can do
that. Finish up with Paul talking about. Thank you. And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. You may have heard it through the grapevine or maybe through the radio airwaves today. This is Leading Edge Medicine. And in case you didn't know, you can tune in on our website to lmclinic.com, and we archive all of our radio shows there. So if you hear something, or maybe you were on a call and you want to hear it over again, or you missed a week or two because you were out, as Dr. Mixon would say, gallivanting and cavorting, then you can always check out and re-listen to our shows. They're available for you under radio and podcast on our website, lmclinic.com. So, for example, this show will be available probably midweek. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes a few days to get it up and running, but then you'll be able to have this and refer back to it or share it with your friends too. lmclinic.com is where you go. All right, we were talking with Paul, and thank you for hanging on the line, Paul, talking about rapamycin.
Yes. There's a study that basically concludes that leucine, by eliminating leucine out of your diet, you almost achieve the same effect as taking rapamycin. Okay. That leucine is the culprit of this mTOR1C signaling. I'm not sure what that means.
Okay. mTOR is a target of rapamycin. Right.
Mammalian
target of rapamycin is what mTOR stands for. So this is one of those rare situations where we've actually looked at a drug and named an entire enzyme system after the effect of the drug. So, because the effect of the drug is so unique. The purpose of taking the rapamycin is to temporarily pause the effect or decrease the effect of the sirtuin 1. We have 11 sirtuin systems, 11, sirt 1 through 11. And each of them are involved in very specific areas of our immune system and of the aging and growth and healing process. So mTOR1 is critically involved in cell turnover and cell replacement. But it turns out that if you pause that activity to some modest degree, people or animals actually live longer. And on average, they live about 15% longer. So rapamycin is a drug that decreases the activity of sirtuin 1. It's approved by the FDA, not for anti-aging, but instead for prevention of transplant rejection. So people that get a new kidney or a new lung or a new heart, they're put on immunosuppressants, and those immunosuppressants are designed to keep your immune system from rejecting the new tissue. But the immunosuppressants have a real downside, and that is they also prevent you from fighting infections and prevent you from finding and killing cancers. Excuse me. So people on the immunosuppressants have high risk of infections and cancer. It turns out that rapamycin, when added along with the other immunosuppressants, helps you to still fight infections pretty well, and it allows you to lower the risk of cancers. So the immunosuppressed people don't get nearly as much cancer if they're also on rapamycin. Now, the difference is they go on rapamycin every day, and they are suppressing this tissue growth and turnover all the time. That's important if you're a transplant patient, because that process is intrinsic to rejecting your foreign tissue. The aging process is different. We can just suppress SIRT1 one day a week, and the animals still live longer. Or we'll suppress a young animal, a young adult animal, for a few months and then take them off it for the rest of their lives, and they still live longer. So this is a drug that doesn't have its impact necessarily while you're taking it, and you don't have to be taking it all the time. Intermittent use seems to make changes in our bodies and in our genetic code and in our gut flora that lasts for long, long periods of time. One of the things we found, for instance, that you've heard of the DNA, the double helix that makes up our genome. Well, that double helix, as we get older, the helix gets less and less tight. It actually expands. And as that helix expands, there's more space between the amino acid pairs, and mutations and substitutions take place more frequently and more easily. It turns out that one of the things rapamycin does is it actually wraps the DNA, the genetic code, more tightly around the histones and makes them less susceptible to mutations and less susceptible to damage. So when we're taking our rapamycin, we're actually changing the physical structure of our DNA. We are not changing the base pairs. The codons are still the codons, but they're tightly wrapped and they're less susceptible to damage, and they stay apparently wrapped more tightly for long periods of time. So most people that are using rapamycin are just using it once a week or so, although there are some folks that have been used it in experiments, you know, twice a week. We don't really know what the optimal dose is. We don't really know how often we should use it. We don't really know how long would be the optimal for using it. So it's a new drug. It's a cutting-edge drug. We're using it for whole new purposes, and we're still learning about it.
Do you administer it orally or with infusion?
No, orally. It's just little pills you take where most of our people are taking it once a week. You know, Monday is my every week day. So I take my rapamycin every Monday, but that's just me. It doesn't have to be Mondays. Nothing magic about that day.
Actually, a lot of my patients tell me they take it on Monday, too.
Just because I do it, yeah.
Well, it's easy, too, right?
It is.
Monday morning, here you come. Okay, beginning of the week, let's start off.
Well, and, you know, I get every Saturday or Sunday, I load up my pill tray for all the pills I'm going to take for the rest of the week.
Uh-huh.
And so I just load up every Monday is the day I know
I have a pill tray that's big enough for all your pills.
I actually have two pill trays.
Okay.
I have one for my morning pills and one for my evening pills.
Okay.
Yes.
There you go.
And so I've got a fistful twice a day that I take.
Yeah.
But again, you know, they're all loaded up a week in advance. And if I travel, I try to load up 2 weeks in advance.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Now, Paul, were you asking about the rapamycin because you were wanting to use it?
Well, yeah, I'm wondering if it might be of some benefit to me.
Mm-hmm. I think you're on the Keytruda.
I am.
So, if you're in oncology treatment, we need to respect the primacy of the oncologist in making these decisions.
That's right.
It doesn't make it a bad choice for you when you're outside of treatment, but we would never want to do anything that could accidentally make your treatment less effective than it could be.
And the reality is we have absolutely no data on rapamycin and Keytruda as a combination.
It might not have a drug interaction, but it might have a patient interaction, which obviously we don't always find out. This can happen from botanicals like quercetin are really good, except for when they accidentally block your chemo from working. And we know this can happen. So I would want you to be very clear with your oncologist if this was safe before considering doing it, whether through us or some other source, because you wouldn't want to undo the benefit of the drugs you're taking that are very strong, very specific for your condition.
And, you know, just to follow up on that, I don't know which facility you're working with, but I know Fred Hutch does offer supplement and oncology medication interaction advice. And so, you know, it is wise to maybe clear all supplements. Even some of my patients that are on active chemotherapy are not even allowed to take vitamin C. So we really do have to be very careful because that takes precedence while you're sick and under their care over anything else that we might do for you.
You know, you've got a disease that with a very aggressive form of prostate cancer, or they would not have you on Keytruda. And so you've got a disease that can kill you, and we don't want to complicate your therapy in any way, shape, or form.
But we do know things generally, like eating mushrooms and eating the soybeans and eating broccoli and all those foods are considered helpful. So if you're worried about getting nutrient density, you could change up your diet a little bit as well if you can't do all the supplements.
Okay.
And the mushrooms, too, they seem to be quite good for this.
All right.
At least maybe the intermediate cancers. I don't know if the advanced ones are responsive. But.
I hope that helps, sir.
All right. Paul, is that helpful? Okay. We will be back after the break talking with Rob in just a moment. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
I'm picking up vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Good vibrations, and we hope you are able to get outside in the sunshine and enjoy some of those good vibrations. I'm Lynette. Hi there, Dr. Umat in the studio, Dr. Mixon, and our guest doctor, Dr. Christine Brazel. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you
for joining us. All right, we are all headed to Mount Vernon, which I understand is overrun with beautiful yellow daffodils right now.
Yes,
Rob. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Sending the pictures to customer service.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the best way to look at it, unless you like getting stuck in traffic. But glad to talk to you guys. So my son has pretty much always had sleep issues, night terrors, even sleepwalking in his younger years, grade school days, and his I know there's a condition that's called, I just don't remember what the heck it is off the top of my head, but he's pretty much always dealt with it. He's just turned 35 now, and he's developed a sleep apnea-type condition, and his central nervous system is messed up. It just seems to be getting worse and worse, and he's now got a fear of falling asleep. His breathing will stop, and he's fear he's going to have a heart attack or die in the middle of his sleep. And I don't know, I'm just, it bothers the heck out of me. And,
sure.
He's my youngest son. So I'm just wondering if, there's any advice. I was thinking about, Sleep Factor, I think you call it, you guys have changed the name, Zen Sleep or something
Zen Factor, or Z Factor. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if a sleep aid would be something that would be good for him.
But none of those are appropriate for sleep apnea. So if he's actually stopping breathing in the night, that's a whole different issue. You know, and there are basically three different kinds of sleep apnea, okay? There is obstructive sleep apnea, and that the most common form of that is just being too heavy, and you raise your diaphragm and your palate falls back, soft palate falls into your airway at night. Then there is
That's what my brother had for many years. He was quite a bit overweight, and he passed away 2 years ago, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Probably from it.
Yeah, and then there's another form of sleep apnea that's not weight-related so much, but it's with kind of overgrowth of tissue in the airway.
Overgrowth.
And that one is basically diagnosed by putting a scope down through the nose all the way down through the airway.
Mm-hmm.
And they can actually open that up with some radio frequency surgery to basically shrink and remove some of that tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a central sleep apnea. And that's the one that I worry for just from your story that might be affecting your son. And that's where there's actually a brain stem dysfunction in which the brain is supposed to monitor what your carbon dioxide levels are in your blood. And when you don't breathe for a moment, carbon dioxide levels rise a bit, and it's supposed to trigger a breath. And so you breathe to blow off the extra carbon dioxide. You bring oxygen in and CO2 out. And some people are not appropriately sensitive. They've actually got a brain stem defect that they stop breathing, and the carbon dioxide can rise and rise and rise and rise, and they still don't breathe until things get, you know, quite dire for them. And, you know, that kind of worries me that might be his situation. Now, you know, I don't know his weight. I don't know if he's had anybody scope his airway.
I don't think so.
You know,
he's about 6'2"-ish and 185, 190. He's
not
overweight.
Lean. Yeah. Yeah. So even there, I'd have somebody, an ENT person. I know Dr. Umat's husband does this a lot.
Uh-huh.
He scopes these people and goes all the way down the airway. And if he finds places where it's narrowed or the tissue is flaccid, he can actually open that up.
Right. UMAK or UMAC? UMACK?
UMMAT. UMAT.
UMM.
That's Dr. Umat.
Oh, UMAT. Gotcha. Yes. Yes. With a T.
Yeah. And this is gotcha. Dr. Right. This is Dr. Sunil Umat. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The ENT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The ENT
right.
surgeon.
I got it.
Okay.
Yep.
And then the other one, it would be a neurologic problem. That is by far, I think, the rarest of sleep apneas. But
The central sleep one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But obviously the most worrisome, because it's hard to alter what the brain is doing.
Right.
There are probably medications that stimulate the sleep center, but I don't know what they are. This is something that's rare enough that I have never actually had to deal with it personally.
So. You mentioned the supplement, and I don't think there's any danger in trying melatonin, but one that is prone to nightmares is unlikely to benefit from taking melatonin. So one just has to be careful. It might not
is
be the other components.
The,
and the Z
factor. The Z factor has taurine, which is extracted from green tea, and then it has some melatonin. And the good news with melatonin is it does help reset our central nervous system so that we relax and sleep at night. The downside of melatonin is the most common side effect of melatonin overdose is nightmares.
Overcorrection. It's not an overdose.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you take too much melatonin, your dreams get so vivid that they disrupt your sleep.
I've tried melatonin a few times, and I wonder when I'm going to be able to go to sleep, even though I probably have been sleeping.
I've
also tried Natrol gummy melatonins, but I also take magnesium glycinate, usually with a vitamin D3 and a K2 at the same time.
Sure.
That seems to help. Or just a good old-fashioned aspirin if I'm just, like, sore from working or whatever and just, you know,
anything that disrupts your sleep
or something.
Certainly.
Something else to consider for your son if he's experiencing that and he's young is to get in to get his heart checked sleep apnea is strongly associated with cardiovascular disease, either causing it or being a result of it. And if he's there could be something going on waking him up that could be cardiovascular in origin that isn't obstructive or necessarily the central apnea but still neurogenic from heart stuff.
Well, like I said, he's pretty much always had this night terror condition. And, when he was younger here and even lately when he's stayed over, it'll wake me up, and it's like I'll hear him like yelling, and it's like, it freaks me out.
Yes, no, I understand why it would.
But I think neurology referral might be in order for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Well, I should have probably had him on a conference here or a three-way call to hear all this, but maybe we'll call back again here.
Absolutely, call back.
Because I know he does have a friend, and she's in the medical profession and trying to help him too. So
okay,
All right, really good. Well, thanks for taking my call. Have a great weekend.
You're welcome, sir.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rob. Just a minute or so left of our show today. Wow, so many different things we talked about today. And again, thank you, Dr. Brazel, for coming in on the show with Dr. Umat and Dr. Mixon. So thank you for that. And I hope you all have plans to get outside and enjoy some sunshine. Yeah, I see some heads nodding. I do too. Let me give you the phone number again to contact us. And that is for your free health analysis appointment. And you can call us and get in touch with us, get an appointment made in Kirkland, Tacoma, or in Linwood. And make this first step for your health. Here's the number. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. And you know what, Rob? You can even have your son listen in on this show by tuning in on our website and checking out the podcast that we keep there. We'll put this show up, should be up there by late Tuesday or Wednesday for sure. All right, lmclinic.com is where you go, and you can also sign up for the free health analysis there as well. We have a schedule there, a calendar. You can pick the day, the time, even the clinic that works best for your busy schedule. That's lmclinic.com. All right. Well, have a great rest of your day. We will be back in the studio live next week. I hope you'll join us. Have a wonderful St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. Wear some green or you could get pinched. Did you notice I'm all in green today?
Okay.
Extra covered today.
Thanks for telling us, Lynette.
Enjoy your weekend and enjoy the springtime weather. We'll be back next week on Leading Edge Medicine. Thank you for listening.